Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
I'm Bruder Stapleton, Chair of the Child Health Advisory Council. Other council members are Craig Hillemeyer, Danielle LaRocca-Rina, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sowen, Arnold Strauss, and Wesley Milliken, the CEO of Career Physician, as well as John Hayes. Today's discussion on virtual interviews. We have used virtual interviews for many years, even prior to the pandemic. But with the pandemic, virtual interviews and virtual meetings are just commonplace. We do them all the time. And my experience recently has suggested that they have become so common, perhaps, that they're not taken quite as seriously as maybe they were in the past. Virtual interviews certainly offer certain advantages. They're cost efficient for both the institutions and candidates in considering a job. They're considered fair because if they're structured well, the same questions will be presented to every candidate and every candidate then given a chance to respond. And if the evaluations are done independently, they offer perhaps less bias. That may not be the case if they're a group interview with discussion rather than single individual interviews. And it shows how well someone can communicate. On the other hand, I've also noticed that at times it's like a first impression. When people are shy or retiring or less outgoing, they may come across as not being interested, having less energy. And many times the evaluation really seems to, despite having been interviewed and answering questions, a lot based on an individual's charisma. So I thought it might be interesting today to delve into this issue a little more deeply with the experience of this really great group of leaders and talk a little bit about, one, how do you prepare someone? If a colleague comes to you and says they're going to be interviewed for a potential role at another institute, leadership role in another institution, what are the best advice you can give to that kind of candidate? Valerie, you have any suggestions?
There are some things that are pretty much the same with a Zoom interview or an in-person interview. I mean, I think every candidate has to go back to the basics to make sure that they understand the individuals they'll be interviewing with. They know something a little bit about those individuals. They've done some preparation about the position, about the institution. As much pre-interview preparation as possible that needs to be done, and probably even more so in a virtual setting, because you don't have the benefit of the interactions that you have with the staff taking you around from room to room and the learning about the space and the people and seeing some of the facilities, so that can often generate questions that you might have during an interview. So I think that is first. But in terms of preparing beyond that, you know, you need to approach, in my opinion, you need to approach a Zoom interview just the same as an in-person. You want to look presentable. You want to have all your electronics working. You want to make sure the lighting is favorable to an interaction. You want to make sure that when you're conducting the interview, you're making eye contact into the camera and that the camera is set up in such a way that, you know, your face can be seen and that you can see the other individual or individuals you're interviewing with. So I think you want to always have a set of questions that are both general as well as potentially some specific ones, maybe more general on the first Zoom interview than things that might be a little more sensitive, but definitely you want to have some questions available and ready to go. And then I guess lastly, I would say on a Zoom interview, much less than a in-person interview, oftentimes the timing is really critical. So, you know, you need to be aware of where you are in the timing of the interview, because there'll be a stack of individuals usually waiting to join in to begin their interview right after you.
Craig, but do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think Valerie covered a lot of the really important points. I think that one of the things on a virtual interview is you don't want to take it too casually. I mean, if it's an in-person interview, oftentimes you've traveled, you're wearing formal clothes, you know, you go to the interview, you have time to think about it. And then oftentimes at a virtual interview, you tend to approach them in a very casual, almost colloquial manner. And I think that's a mistake. I mean, I think you need to make sure you give yourself a timeout in your day before that interview, maybe a half hour, maybe 15 minutes. Make sure you dress up a little bit. You don't want to just be wearing a t-shirt if you've been working out in the garden or something. I mean, you really need to have some formality to the whole process. I think it's important to make sure that you have the right sort of speech. I think sometimes people in a home environment, if that's where they're interviewing from, tend to be a little bit more colloquial and not as formal in their speech. And so it really is important to realize that just as you're gathering information and forming opinions, so are the interviewers. They're gathering information and forming opinions. And so you want to really make it as formal, perhaps, as you can. One of the things that I've occasionally seen in virtual interviews is that people sometimes don't have information as readily available. You want to have your CV in front of you. So if they question you about your CV, you're both talking about the same copy and you're really asking questions that you both understand. And if there are any other materials that you submitted, I would have copies of those materials present during the virtual interview, because you can't just hand them across the table. You need to actually be able to look at them and talk about them. So I think in general, the principles are pretty much the same, but there are some very much specific things that we need to pay attention to so that people get the best impression that they can of you, because first impressions are very important in this interview process.
Those are great comments. Answering questions in a crisp way is also a really good idea, because the committee wants to ask a lot of questions. And if you take too much time, it creates almost some tension, I think, sometimes in the committee structure and how the interviews go. And the other is really showing some energy. Acting like you're really interested in this job is important, because people perceive that. They don't get a chance in person to do that, but it's how they perceive it. So Arnie, how do you prepare the search committee, and what are the best practices in conducting a video review of candidates?
The preparation is even more important for a video interview than it is for an in-person interview, in that you have to have the materials available. As Craig said, you need to have reviewed both the interviewee and the interviewers need to have those materials available and that can be visualized for discussion, especially if there are particular points, for example, about finance or facilities. Because, for example, the facilities cannot be shown well in a virtual interview. So there are some extra things that will have to happen in a Zoom interview that did not need to happen in a live one. But I would also emphasize to treat it, a video interview, exactly as one would treat an in-person interview. Personally, I don't think those Zoom interviews should ever be done from home. I think they should be done in the office. With the appropriate background, so that people can feel that they're being treated as if they were there and have a feeling for the environment, rather than the in-home looseness that Craig alluded to. I do think they're more difficult and require more preparation in some ways than an in-person interview. But that they need to be treated just as seriously and just as Craig said, as formally.
Thanks, Arnie. Danielle, how do you instruct the search committee? How do you organize the video interviews so that you get the best opportunity to evaluate a candidate?
Thank you. Again, I think this is an important topic. And Bruder, thank you for sharing with us that there are no real studies that have actually taking a look at this, but the gray literature and the web does have some references. And so first thing I would say is it's nice to share that I saw from the Harvard Review, as well as for Indeed, that there are some standard things that have been shared. Okay, so that's one. But the other is, you know, as I was listening to try to add to everything that everyone has said, is something that I've done with really formal presentations where I'm moderating is a run of show. So I think it might be a wise thing to actually do a run of show with the search committee so that it's clear that this is an organized process. I absolutely concur with what my colleagues have said: preparation, professional demeanor. The stakes are high and the competition may actually be higher, so that there are multiple candidates, so that you're requiring your search committee to be really well prepared. And then the technical preparation can't be understated. Going to the office where the technical support is the best is the wisest thing, okay? At my home, I've decided to have both internet as well as Wi-Fi connection. But when I have a major event going, I'm going to the office because I really need that technical support around me so that I can focus on the interview and not on the technical aspects of it. I think that, again, the thing that you could review from a run of show is the charge to the search committee, right? Okay, let's be clear that that charge doesn't change because we're in virtual. Who's at the table? And the other thing is a formatting issue. So do we all appear like this and the interview is here? This is where the run of show may be helpful. Do you take one interviewer at a time? Usually in a search committee, as you prepare, you say, we're going to have these folks ask the questions and then hand over to that. Actually practicing that in a run of show may be very helpful, or at least having an outline for how things need to proceed. And I think using a standardized rating system is something that we've talked about when we've talked about just search committees, et cetera, so that we want to look not just as how someone presents themselves, but the content of what they're sharing with us. And I would say I would never rely on a virtual interview to be the last interview or the only interview. Then the in-person interview is going to have to complement that. So I'll stop here, but again, an important topic.
Very good advice. Bruce, when you are conducting a virtual interview or part of a virtual interview, what types of questions or what characteristics of the candidate's responses are most informative to you as you consider whether to move a candidate forward?
Bruder, the question about somebody's leadership ability is equally valid, whether it's a live or a virtual interview, and it's equally sometimes difficult to determine. When I was in business school, I took a course in leadership and organizational behavior, required course, and the professor began asking if leaders are made or born. He had a vested interest since he was a well-known author of popular books on leadership, but there are certain innate characteristics: empathy, curiosity, ability to actively listen, what the younger generation is calling charisma. All of these things can be assessed by the interview itself without specific questions. There nevertheless may be some questions that are helpful. First off, the ones that I have found don't really work well are questions like, tell me about a time you failed, what is your greatest strength, what are your weaknesses? These are classic questions, and so classic that all the answers are given in different ways on the internet. People prepare for them, and I don't gain a lot. But in understanding if somebody can learn as a leader, the question I like to ask is to have them tell me what their understanding is of their leadership role, to tell me about a time that they were a leader, but to follow that up and ask them, what did you learn from that? That gives a lot of insight as to their ability to learn and to grow as a leader, which is just as important as what they bring to the table at the day one.
Great perspective. Bob, when you've participated in virtual interactions, what are some of the things that guide your decisions and impressions?
One of the things that I've seen work really well is to have the committee spend a fair bit of time on the front end deciding specifically what questions should be asked, and people can take turns asking those. And there's, I think, some real advantage to having everyone in the committee hear the responses to those questions from all the candidates and to hear them concurrently. Some of the most successful search committees, of which I was a member, spent a fair bit of time on the front end generating those questions and considering some of the things Bruce just said about the types of questions that'll be most revealing. It also allows us to regulate, if you will. I mean, you know, there are some people on a search committee who perhaps haven't been on a major search committee and don't know that there are some limits to what one can legally ask, for example. So I think getting real specific and saying these are the questions we want to make sure we cover, and perhaps even who's going to ask them. Sometimes with group interviews, the institution fails to tell the interviewee who all these people are and what their roles are. It's nice if you can try to provide them with all that information so that when someone asks a question, the interviewee knows who that person is and what their role might be in the institution. I would agree with everyone that these interview structures, if conducted well, can be just as revealing as in-person interviews. And I have always liked the fact that the entire search committee is hearing the same sorts of responses from all the candidates.
Great comments. Valerie, you have something.
I was just going to say that I think my experience, and I do think there are unique institutions that do all of the interviews by Zoom, but my experience is most interviews done by search committees, the Zoom interviews are kind of the first phase, the screening phase, the culling of the group of candidates. And I think that you have to be very, very careful with that. You're having us talk about how do you find the top candidates. One of the things that I have seen happen with Zoom interviews when they don't go well is some potentially really great candidates don't make it forward to the in-person interviews or to the more selected one-on-one interviews that are part of the second and third phase of a search. The advice that I think you have to give to everyone, and I think very carefully your reading of the evaluations have to consider, did the Zoom process not adequately let us get our answers and our insight into this candidate completed? Because I think one of the worst things that can happen, and I have seen it happen, is that the Zoom interview goes very poorly because the candidate doesn't feel comfortable one-on-one with a camera. They're more comfortable in a setting where they're in a room talking to someone. And that is reflected in the evaluation, and the candidate doesn't move forward. Or the candidate has such a terrible Zoom experience that they make the decision not to go forward. So I think for both the candidates, you know, I always tell candidates, your job on your very first interview, no matter what kind of interview it is, your job is to get selected to the second phase, because you won't be able to figure out if this is the right job for you unless you get to the second phase. At that point, you can start to make decisions. The same is true for the search committee. You do not want someone to be eliminated in the first phase that you fail to get the information that you need, because you want to move as many candidates forward to the second phase that will help you to get to that point. And so I think that, you know, I would just offer those comments because I think we've said, you know, and I do believe it's true, the Zoom can be as good as an in-person for screening, but it can also not always go well. And you need to really make sure that you don't negate a candidate going forward because of the Zoom being an interface that just wasn't good for the candidate or wasn't good for the search committee process.
Yeah, I think that several people have made the observation how important this Zoom interview is. And I think probably we're all getting more experienced at Zoom type interviews than we were 5 years ago. But I think it's important, especially if it's one of your first experiences Zooming, that you have some practice runs. Realize that in an in-person interview, there are a lot of things, whether it be handshake, whether it be how your whole body appearance is during the interview, that people get clues from and form impressions from. And during a Zoom interview, it's not so easy for them to perform those impressions. So it's important to do some head nodding, to make eye contact with the camera, to make sure that people get those clues that make them understand how interested and involved you are in the process.
Great advice. Danielle?
One of the things that an idea that I've heard increasingly, maybe from the generation that has lived with this, is the idea of digital privacy. And so one thing we haven't talked about is confidentiality. I was on a Zoom call that automatically not only recorded, but then sent out the information. And we know that these interviews have a degree of confidentiality that needs to be transparent to both the interviewers as well as the interviewee. So that's something I think from a technical perspective, we shouldn't be blindsided by our technology and really know that landscape well. And that's where I say going to the office, having the folks who have technical expertise with this and then can inform the committee is actually quite important.
Great point. Bob, last comment.
Just a question to the group. Because of the concurrent style of these interviews, I wondered whether there's pros or cons to the committee then collectively assessing how the interview went. There's a risk potentially that you get kind of groupthink and that perhaps individual perspectives might get overlooked. What are people's thoughts about a unanimity or unanimous response to the interview versus individual responses?
I was thinking about that same topic. And Wesley, you've had a lot of experience in these screening interviews. What's your perspective?
I think there are quiet members of search committees and there are vocal members of search committees. And I think if given the opportunity, your vocal members may very well bias your committees with their opinions. With all of our searches, we have, our surveys are all online so that committee members can fill them out immediately following each interview. And so we would historically encourage the committee members to do that and to make sure in tracking responses that we've garnered a majority of the feedback from the committee before we get into a group discussion about the candidates. I think there'll be a time for that, for sure. That's just one perspective.
Really, really great point. It's well known that the first person that makes a comment can then create a bias for the rest of the discussion. Well, this has been a wonderful discussion. The points that I think have been made so well is preparedness by the candidate, energy, being active and both listening and engaged in the conversation, being in a professional setting and looking professional, and preparedness by the committee in understanding what the role is and how the questions are going to be asked, what the questions are, and if possible, getting the committee engaged in writing questions that they believe will help them meet the goals of finding the best person. And then finally, being very thoughtful in the evaluation so that you don't overlook the top candidates and giving each member of the committee an independent opportunity to evaluate the candidates and then make assessments before you move on. So great discussion. Thank you, everyone. For those listening, there are a number of Insight Conversations on the Career Physician website. We encourage you to look at them if they offer you some opportunity to think about leadership. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30-plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. Our council members include the following physicians: Bruder Stapleton, Christine Gleason, Craig Hillemeyer, Renee Jenkins, Danielle LaRocque Arena, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sawin, and Arnold Strauss. To view our council members' bios, please visit careerphysician.com and click on the Child Health Advisory Leadership tab.